Show name. Uncle Wack isn't really my uncle, and his hair isn't really white. He bleaches it to look this way, shaves the sides of his head clean to get a stripe of skunkish mohawk. He's my real Uncle Kai's best friend, and they are trying to get sober together. They are keeping their hands busy. Uncle Wack's the one who rigged up the illegal satellite dish on our roof, the black box with an infinity of cable. He shoves playing cards into the box, sometimes a spent matchbook. This trips the system, he says. Abracadabra. My two uncles like to hammer up on our roof while I'm trying to study Latin. They mow the lawn, scrub our water tanks. They pour jugs of chlorine and chemicals into our fountain out front until it looks carbonated. My mother is proud of her little brother and his friend. She knows they are trying to be good and clean from dope, which is something she also wants very badly for herself. When my uncles are not fixing up the house for cash, they're making calls for my father. In our living room, all of them scream at people on the phone and sell stocks for someone named Jordan Belfort. This is something I won't understand until the day I do. My parents are leaving town again. So mega lucky, say the kids at school. Rich parents, all those vacays. Do you get back souvenirs, pets? But I'm not really sure where they go. Last month, I know my father went to South Africa to visit my half-brothers, who live in Johannesburg with their mother. I know this because my father got into some sort of trouble on the plane. Some men in suits decided that smoking in the sky is dangerous, a menace, and banned it just a few days before his 19-hour flight. At the fifth hour, my father snuck a smoke in the airplane bathroom with his head in the toilet, flushing every few seconds to suck the evidence down. He returned home with some stories about this incident and a mousetrap-sized metal dulcimer for me. What would you say to Uncle Wack taking care of you this week, huh? Does that sound like fun? Uncle Wack can take you to Blockbuster. I bet he'll even watch you ride. My mother's using the voice she uses when she wants something. It climbs up and down octaves, a sing-song, composed, motherly pitch. Where are you going now? A romantic getaway, okay? Don't worry about that, okay? We need mommy-daddy time, and next week daddy will take you to Vegas. Okay. I don't want Uncle Wack to watch me ride horses. Riding is the only thing in the world that's my own. I took my dad for a ride only once, in North Carolina, around my birthday in July. He slung his right leg over an Appaloosa named Trigger, hooked his Gucci leather loafers into the Western stirrups, and let me adjust his heels. I led him up Smith Mountain in a winding trot. My father smoked with his lips while both hands gripped the saddle horn, which I found particularly impressive. "Son," he said, "what do I do about, how do I go about, how do I forgot to wear underwear." "Pick a side and move it all over," I said. I didn't know what it meant when I said it, but I'd heard this question and answer before with other men on other trails. My father wore a face bunched in pain for the rest of the trail. He couldn't keep his toes up, his shoulders square. He looked completely amateur, sloppy, bumbling. When I think about riding, this is what I love most. I have a power, a strength, a language with animals big enough to kill a person, easy. It's the one thing I have. "Are you paying Uncle Wack to hang out with me?" I ask. "He needs the money," my mother says. "He's on a good track, doing the good work, one day at a time." "What about Uncle Kai?" "He's not ready," she says. "Not responsible, not yet." "Auntie T?" "Auntie T isn't coming back for a while." "Fine," I say, "if we do grown-up stuff. But only if." My parents give Uncle Wack very clear instructions, like they've been practicing for this moment all their lives, parenting, to show somebody what it is they know. "She doesn't like to be left alone," says my mother, "especially at night. She has night terrors, chronic nosebleeds, but she knows how to handle it. She can cook soup for herself, and mostly she'll read all day, letters too. You'll have to take her to the barn to feed her horses. You'll have to help her take her boots off, pull by the heel. You'll have to make sure she wears a helmet. You'll get it. And whatever you do, obviously, don't let anyone in this house without a warrant. Lock up. The alarm code is 711. When I'm older, I'll understand that this is around the time the FBI became interested in my father and his friends. My uncle, Jordan Belfort. Soon, our family will make headlines. But right now, I nod and say, "We are very private people, yes, the way I've been taught." My father winks at me. He hands Uncle Whack a wad of cash, thick as a hockey puck, folded over in half. "Careful with her," he says. "She's good." Uncle Whack is 26 years old, and I think he's the oldest friend I'll ever have. He wears blue basketball shorts with tiny pinprick-sized holes all over them, pulled down to just above his knees. Above that, plaid boxers lumpy with his white tee. His face is a perfect boyish circle, dimpled in the cheeks, and sometimes he wears a sideways baseball cap over the skunk do. He doesn't look like any of my men on Black Box Channels 590 through 595. "Got it, madman," says Uncle Whack, giving a salute. "Almost forgot," says my father, handing him the keys to our car. "Careful with my Jag," he says. "I know people who'd take care of you if anything happens to my Jag, yeah? Yeah?" He points to Uncle Whack and play punches him in the chest. We all laugh along. Uncle Whack slings my father's bags over his shoulders, Louis Vuitton printed leather, matching, and straightens his back like a butler as he walks my parents to the limousine parked on our black yawn of driveway. "Next week, Vegas," screams my father. "Get ready, baby." I wave from the front door. "Did you know a rat lives inside our Jaguar?" I ask. "Did you know" is my favorite game to play with Uncle Whack. It makes me sound informed, knowledgeable. "Nah, Ma, that ain't true." He tosses his baseball cap on our pink leather couch, then dives into it. "Did you know rat attacks are real? The last one happened in New York in 1970-something. Nobody believes me about the rat in our car because it lives in the back seat, but one day it's gonna rat attack me with a rat pack and my eyeballs will get chewed out by the time my parents get me on the Sawgrass Expressway." "Damn, Ma, why are you always so twisted?" Uncle Whack pulls a pack of Parliament lights from the waistband of his boxers. He bites into the filter, lights up, blows the smoke up into our skylight. A band of wavy light streams down on his body as if he's a saint. "Did you know smoking will kill you?" I say. "But your body can and will repair itself within 5 years of your last cigarette." "What are you, 10? Chill with that shit. You read that in the encyclopedia?" Last week, a major anti-smoking organization came to our school and taught us about the dangers of tobacco. We sang a song about cigarettes to the melody of Peter Pan's "I Won't Grow Up" as a group of PTA parents and teachers filmed us on camcorders for a potential television commercial. "I won't light up," we sang. "I will never smoke a day, 'cause tobacco is evil, it will take your youth away. 'Cause cigarettes are awfuler than all the awful things that ever were. I'll never light up, never light up, never light up. Not me." At the end of the day, a blonde dreidel of a woman passed around a pack of Salem lights and told us to all sniff them and let the consequences spill over our hearts. I never wanted to let go of that pack. I wanted to absorb that woody, muscled smell. I wanted to be the blonde perm Sandy at the end of Grease, zipped in black, tight and shining as a seal, desired and getting it when she chewed out that cigarette with a stiletto twist, as if it were a natural instinct, one she'd known all along. I pulled a Salem from the pack and ran it back and forth under my nose like a harmonica, feeling every bump of paper on my skin. I considered stealing it. Pocket? Caboodle? But the dreidel woman snapped at me to pass it on, and so I did. "Did you know I'm going to be famous?" I say. "A famous no-smoking advocate." Uncle Whack thumbs at the remote, and then another remote, and then a third. My father likes this setup, a 6-foot big screen TV with 3 smaller TVs on top of it. This way, he can watch several games at the same time. Uncle Whack flicks ash into my father's ashtray on the couch. So what you want to watch on Daddy Wack's black box? I do not tell him the truth. At the barn, Uncle Wack is afraid of the horses. I show him how to palm carrots into their mouths, fingers webbed away from the teeth, but Uncle Wack keeps his distance. He adjusts his hat, turns it forward and back, saying, "Nah, Ma, I don't do big dogs." "What's your guy's name?" he asks. "I have four of them," I say, "but this one's my favorite." I kiss my pony on the nose. Nicky is his home name, but his show name is Cloud 9. I'm convinced the temperature of Nikki's nose can predict the weather. Today, I feel rain. "What's a show name?" "Your home name is, like, stupid. It's who you are at home. Alfie or Frisky or Wrinkles, usually kind of embarrassing. Your show name is the one you use in horse shows and big stadiums when you're all braided up and exactly who you want to be. They're jazzier, better. My horses are Cloud 9, Velvet Slippers, and Bids Glitterman. See? Tulip's my mini pony, and she doesn't have a show name because she'll never grow up or be famous." Uncle Wack rolls his eyes. I can tell he is not taking me seriously. "Want to help me tack up?" I ask. "Can I sit while I do it?" "I guess." I clasped Nikki into the cross ties in the aisle of the barn. I ask Uncle Wack to hand over my bounce pad, my saddle. He flinches when I tighten the girth around Nikki's barrel belly, saying, "Damn, yo, that's rough." He loops the leather martingale around his own neck and smiles. "Giddy up, it's Uncle Wack." I don't think he's ever been around horses before. I remove Nikki's halter and wrap my arm around his head before I say, "Watch this," plunging my fingers into his gums behind his molars, his mouth grinding grassy foam onto my shirt as I lift the snaffle bit over his tongue. There is nothing exciting or impressive about putting a bridle on a horse, but I want to show Uncle Wack that I am not afraid of teeth, that I can be firm and deliberate. "Did you know I brought Nikki to school for show and tell?" "I think I heard about that," says Uncle Wack. "I took him on a course around the playground, and we jumped the seesaw back and forth. It was groovy. The school news did a whole segment on me." "Is that what fancy school's like these days? In the rat's mouth? Kids bringing their ponies to school and shit?" "I'm going to nationals this summer, you know," I say. "In Chicago. Then the Olympics, obviously. I'm kind of a big deal. I'm going to be the next Margie Goldstein Engel. Even she says I've got something special." "That's because you're a kid," says Uncle Wack. "Everyone talks kids up like they're special." I reach my left toe into my stirrup iron and swing myself up and over Nikki's body. No leg up, no mounting block. I want my fake uncle to know I'm strong. In the ring, I warm up quickly, 2-point trot canter. We move in tight circles. I jump courses without counting my strides. I want speed, not precision. When we fly, I yank on Nikki's mane, dive forward, ducking. I forget about form. Uncle Wack is sitting on a lawn chair near the front of the barn. His legs are propped up on a tack box. He's not even looking at me. He's looking into his lap, checking his beeper. I dig my spurs into the sides of Nikki's body. Go, boy. We build until the two of us are tight and furious as a storm wall. He frosts at the mouth and neck. He can read me. We jump and jump and jump and jump until the insides of my legs burn with that feeling I can never seem to put away. Her name is Lacey, and she's the kind of girl worth taking home to mom. She's got small feet, and she's not afraid of anything. She's like a gypsy, the way she moves around from couch to couch, a peach on her that you wouldn't believe. Lacey, no last name. This is what Uncle Wack tells me anyway, or maybe some of it is what I've gathered about Lacey from the words I clip out and keep from their conversations, things I may have even imagined from their code talking. I keep the words in a list on my journal below the title, Total Facts Known About Lacey, No Last Name. The thing is, Uncle Wack says, Lacey lives in Tampa. The thing is, he says, I need to see her. From the way Uncle Wack speaks to Lacey on our landline, I think she must have broken his heart. I've overheard my mom use this voice before, at night, with my father, that desperate animal breathing between unrelated phrases. Please, would you stay? On the other end, I hear Lacey's sighs rattle the receiver in a wet-sounding static. She speaks slowly. Oh, Wendell, don't. And that's about all I hear from her. Uncle Wack counts facts on his fingers, recalling small things they have in common. The show with the lady with the vase on her head, the man at the fair, the way he popped his son. Phrases I can only assume are inside jokes they once shared, years ago. Lil Kiwi, he says, hanging up the phone. You mind if I call you that? I guess I don't mind, I say. He lights a smoke and scoots his feet up on the couch. His knees tuck in as if he were a little kid, wanting something. It's just that I never know what to call you. Takira, T.T. Takara. Takira's kind of a hood-ass name for a prep school chink, you know that? Uncle Wack pulls this name, Lil Kiwi, from an armband my friend Jenny made me. She cut a ribbed sock straight across in two neat slices to make a stretchy band of fray. She colored it highlighter green, bedazzled a few stones, and scrawled Lil Kiwi in the jagged graffiti letters she's been practicing. This is your rap name, she'd said. I'm Banna, short for banana, and you're Lil Kiwi. Together we can be some dope-ass rapping fruit. No more of that Jewy Jennifer shit. Uncle Wack pulls on his smoke and offers me a fist bump. I need you to be cool about something, he says. You're cool, though, aren't you? Uncle Wack offers me three promises if I say yes to Tampa. We can go to Busch Gardens and ride as many roller coasters as I want. He'll buy me the best, fanciest dinner in the world, a real date, me and you, he says. And Lacey will take me shopping and style my hair and trim my nails, whatever girls do with girls. I don't want to do girl things with Lacey. I don't want to see Lacey's face or get to know the inner workings of Lacey or hear Lacey speak to Uncle Wack in her breathy, papery voice. Oh, Wendell, gripping his hand or kissing his eyelids or cupping a flame to his cigarette. You know you shouldn't smoke, darling. It's bad for you. But then there's this thought, the thought that makes the roof of my mouth tingle, that makes me feel different around Uncle Wack than the way I feel around my dad or Uncle Kai. What it is, so simple. He will learn to love me. He will learn to love me before he gets to her. Let's go, I say. I'm cool. We drive northwest to Tampa in my parents' Jaguar with the top up. The rats will get us more easily this way, I say. They're scared of the wind. I don't play like that, says Uncle Wack. The wind, my hair, no bueno. He slicks back the skunk stripe with more hair gel. He looks extra polished. Jeans instead of the basketball shorts, a shave that makes his chin look like a new sponge. He looks so nice it makes the hairs on the back of my neck go wired, and it also repulses me. When is Lacey going to meet us? I ask. I don't know yet, Ma, he says. Gotta wait for the beep. He taps his beeper a few times, hooked on his belt loop to remind me that it's there. He lights a cigarette with the red snail coil of the car lighter. Is she really the right girl for you? I ask. For real, for real? Always has been, he says. Cross my heart and hope to die. It smells different up in Tampa, on the other side of the state. Swampier, I think. Billboards with goopy fetuses on them dash by. Alien-looking creatures that I want to squeeze in my hands like putty. I have a heartbeat, they read. Do the right thing. When do we go on our date? I ask. It's getting dark, and the mere fact of evening makes my body buzz with current. Lacey hasn't come through yet, he says, so let's hit up some grub. Uncle Wack drives us to a freight train plugged right into the ground. I used to come here all the time, he says. Choo-choo! He pulls his arm like he's a conductor, but I don't laugh. He opens the door for me. M'lady. We sit facing each other in a small booth on the train. White tablecloths. A single rose in a plastic vase. Older couple sit around us in baseball caps. The Dolphins, the Canes, the Heat. You ever try a steak before? Uncle Wack asks me. Filet mignon. Best of the best. I don't think so, I say. Mostly, I eat a lot of pigs, and Campbell's soup, and lobster. Well, tonight's the night, he says, clapping his palms and rubbing them together. I got the madman's cash and a hot date. We'll share a filet, he tells the waitress. Rare. When the steak comes, I watch Uncle Wax slice it and fork a cube on his tongue. I watch him chew with his mouth open, the way I am always told not to do, with fleshy fibers of red flashing between his teeth. A pool of oily blood shines around the meat, and I slice off a piece of my own. I take it between my teeth, then into my mouth. I suck the juices, bite. The saltiness sticks in my molars as I grind my jaw and slice some more. This is the best moment of my life, I say, looking at him. I mean it. After dinner, Uncle Wack pulls us into a Red Roof Inn. The red neon letters look like cartoon daggers. Can we stay somewhere else? I want to know. I don't think I like it here. We're not rolling up to the Ritz, Ma, he says. You're not with Mommy and Daddy. There are two beds inside the room, a brown sticky carpet between them. When I sit on the foot of the bed, I feel the other half of the mattress rise up. The ceiling is covered in a popcorn plaster, and I imagine a chunk of it falling into my mouth in the middle of the night, choking me. I do not want to die in a Red Roof Inn. Look, a TV, says Uncle Wack. You're used to those. He flips through the channels, a rainbow of static, a weather report, Nickelodeon, a lion tearing up a zebra. Fun, he says. Make yourself comfortable so you can sleep, okay, Ma? I go into the bathroom to change into my lavender silk pajama set. I look in the mirror, examine my crooked bangs, the holes in my ears pierced too high up, the hair sprouting between my eyebrows. My buck teeth peek out so far from between my lips that it's difficult to close them. I do not want to look like a baby anymore. I do not want to die in a Red Roof Inn. When I walk back into the bedroom, Uncle Wack is counting the wad of cash on his bed. Listen to me, he says, sitting down. I've got to go find Lacey now. That cool? That is not cool, I say. That is definitely not cool. I won't be long, he says. You'll fall asleep and I'll be back. You'll wake up tomorrow and Uncle Wack will be right here, ready for the roller coasters, okay? You like that Coomba ride, don't you, that big blue? I feel it in my throat first, the tight knot that always unfurls itself into a shakiness all over my face. From there, I can never stop the tears from coming, and I hate myself for it. I slam my fist into the mattress. Don't leave me, I wail. Please, I love you, don't leave me. It's okay, Ma, he says. He moves over to my bed to hug me. He pulls my face into his chest. Shh, it's okay, girl. Damn, you're just a kid. I kick myself under the covers and tell him I'll never speak to him again. I'll tell my parents he kidnapped me for ransom as soon as I can find a phone. I'll run away. I will drown myself face down in the motel bathtub. La, 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 I sing. I'm not even listening to you. The thought of him leaving feels worse than any other time I have ever been left. I didn't know this one was coming. I'll be back soon, he says. Promise. And the door slams before I can take any of it back. The next morning, I wake up to Uncle Wack smoking in the corner of the room. His eyes are swollen, staring out the window, and his skunk stripe is dangling down on the side of his head. His beeper is on the coffee table in front of him, dark and still. How is Lacey? I ask. She didn't come through, he says. He won't look at me. Maybe today, maybe at the park. Come on, get dressed. Uncle Wack delivers on exactly what he promised. He lets me ride all the roller coasters I want to ride, the Coomba, the Montu, twice and then three times, over and over again. I hold his hand in the line for every ride and stand next to the wooden height requirement signs to show him that I'm okay. On the Congo River Rapids ride, we get so drenched our shirts suction our bodies. Uncle Wack checks his beeper constantly, but it's not hooked onto his belt loop anymore. It's tucked away in his pocket. So where's the famous Lacey? I ask. She's caught up, he says. We stop at a concession stand. Uncle Wack buys me a turkey leg and a pack of sour punch straws that I zip up in my fanny pack. We sit down at a picnic table under an umbrella, and I gnaw the meat off the bone, offer him a bite. "Can we see the giraffes?" I say. "I hear they have purple tongues." "Sure, Ma," he says. "I had a good time on this trip with you, Wendell," I say. "I'm your Uncle Whack. Don't forget it." He looks more serious now, his eyes covered by thin, black glasses. I can tell by the shade of his nose that he's been crying under there. "Okay, Wendell," I say. "This'll stay a secret between us, right, Ma?" he says. "Tampa and all." "Yes, Wendell. Listen, I love this girl. It's true that I'll keep this secret always, until now. Secrets are the only kind of love I know. It's also true that my parents will never ask much about what we did. Years from now, I'll ask whatever happened to Uncle Whack, and my mother will say, 'I remember him, the nicest boy.'" I open my fanny pack and take out a sour punch straw. I bite into it again and again until the foot-long candy is just a few inches of gritty sugar hanging out of my mouth. "You can't eat strawberry-flavored shit if you're Lil' Kiwi," he says. "That ain't right." "I don't want to be Lil' Kiwi anymore," I say. "Oh yeah? Then who?" "Call me Sandy," I say. "It's my show name." The next week, as promised, my father takes me to Las Vegas. Our connecting flight is in St. Louis, and we're delayed. There's a storm coming through. My father is irritable in the airport, shaking his foot, tapping his pinky ring against the armrest. He points over to the smoking lounge. It looks like a giant ice cube from across the terminal, a glass square with eerie cloudiness. "You can handle it, right?" says my father. "You're a big girl now." I clamp my mouth closed as we walk into the room. I do not want to be poisoned to death in the St. Louis airport. I sit next to my father on a bench, and we're surrounded by other people with their own brands of smokes, their own newspapers and headlines. I want to talk to each and every person, ask where they're going, but everyone, including my father, is quiet. They puff, they read. The streams of smoke break, then lift. It looks like ballet, this evidence of adulthood. My father wraps his arm around me like he's proud, and I rest my head in his armpit, open my mouth, breathe in the gray air as deeply as I can. I hold it. Breathe out. There are old splintered wooden seats back at our boarding gate. The wood is soft. It gives way to my thumbnail. The wood is scattered with initials and drawings, heart stars and forevers. And when my father goes to the bathroom, I sneak the keys to his Jaguar out of his sports jacket pocket for my own message. I want to carve my name into the armrest to honor this day, the day I was woman enough to sit inside the smoking room. But I am afraid to get caught before our flight. I'm afraid of proof. I think someone might arrest me. I grip the keys in a fist and bring it down. Push and drag it.